so many people, Andrew, come to me and they say, I can't get a mortgage. And I say, how do you know? Oh, because I asked my bank. Yeah, just because your bank won't give you a mortgage. That's one of hundreds of lenders.
Well, quite often we'll say to a lender, here's a case, would you do this? And they go, oh, no, we couldn't go that, do that. And then the next lender we go to says, oh, yeah, that's all right. We have had for some time this year some rates that I don't want to call fake. You can misunderstand them if you're not careful. So supposing you came to a rate that was 3.5% fixed for 2 years, doesn't that sound appealing at the moment? Look carefully. There might be more to it than you realise.
Go on, like what?
Like a product fee, an upfront fee of £15,000.
Oh, 15,000.
Yes, I've seen it. Lenders tick boxes. I always have this silly thing. I say that our king, King Charles, if he rang up a buy-to-let lender and said, I'd like a buy-to-let mortgage, please, he might well be declined because he might not be able to tick all the boxes on their list.
So, Andrew, thanks for coming to the studio. Okay. I wanted to pick your brain about mortgages.
Yes, right.
So you're a very experienced mortgage broker. You've certainly supplied me millions of pounds worth of mortgages for my portfolio. And I want to go through some of the common pitfalls that people face when getting a property on the finance element of it.
Yeah.
So the first thing is I teach, as you know, joint ventures.
Yeah.
And joint ventures is where you might buy a property with somebody else, maybe even through a company. What are some of the issues that you see with joint ventures from a finance and mortgage perspective?
Yes, of course. You have to, if you're having a partner, you have to approve the terms that you're setting up with that partner. But the mortgage lender you go to, if they know there's a partner, a joint venture, they have to approve the arrangements that you have with that partner. Now, some people say to me, well, it's all right. My solicitor has signed off an agreement that we've done. That doesn't necessarily mean that the mortgage lender will also be comfortable with that. So it's important if you're going to have a formal agreement with somebody to buy a property together, that you test it with the mortgage lender that you're going to go to see that they're comfortable with the way you're doing it.
Right.
And comfortable with the individual. I mean, the individual might have a poor credit record. They might not live in this country. So it's most important not to just make assumptions if you have a joint venture, to make sure it's checked out, the way it's put together is checked out with the mortgage lender.
And would that be something that a broker like yourself could advise on potentially? So if I came to you and said, I'm doing this deal, I'm planning on doing it with my friend Johnny, here's how we've structured it.
Yes.
Would you have an idea as to what lenders may or may not be comfortable with?
We would have an idea, but we would say, don't take a risk on that because by the time you come to do it, the lenders might have changed their philosophy or they might have even gone out of business. So let's check it now.
Right.
Tell us what you have in mind. Tell us how you expect to put the thing together, and then we can look at a variety of lenders.
Yeah, and for anyone that doesn't know what a mortgage broker does, I mean, I think a mortgage broker is one of the key players in your power team because you need finance for your deals generally.
Yeah,
and if you're relying on one lender, I mean, so many people, Andrew, come to me and they say, I can't get a mortgage, and I say, how do you know? Oh, because I asked my bank.
Yes.
Yeah, just because your bank won't give you a mortgage, that's one of hundreds of lenders.
Yes.
And also, depending on your criteria, it might be that you can get much better rates. It might be that there's lenders have got so many different packages and products and ideas and interest rates, and you need to know which lender's suitable specifically for you and for the deal that you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Well, quite often we'll say to a lender, here's a case, would you do this? And they go, oh, no, we couldn't go that, do that. And then the next lender we go to says, well, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. Let's talk about overseas investors because, again, more and more people are tapping into finance overseas. So what happens if funds are coming from abroad?
Has to be checked before you go any further that the country of origin of the funds is acceptable to the UK government because there's a banned list of certain countries and that list changes from time to time. So in other words, the client, the solicitor, estate agents, are not allowed to deal with finances that come in from certain countries abroad. It's a non-starter for some of them. So if you've got an investor who might be a relative from abroad or just an investor from abroad, it's important to ascertain where that money is, which country it's in and where it's coming from, because it could be a non-starter if it's not.
What countries then would be a non-starter?
Well, countries like Russia at the moment.
It's so weird. I've got a friend who's Russian.
Yes.
His name's Igor. It was so difficult for him to get a mortgage. Even though he's living in the UK, he got one in the end. I think you might have even sorted him out.
I think we probably did. See, we could do a mortgage for him. If somebody is living in the UK and they have the right to be in the UK, if the money that they're going to use as the deposit is in the UK, that's okay. What we're talking about is money that is coming in from a country to be the deposit funds.
Yeah, but Matt, he had problems with lenders just because he's Russian.
Wow.
They said, nope, you're Russian.
Yeah, yeah.
Even... I mean, they're being persecuted.
Yes, yes.
Because of the war, people. Yes. But it's not right that an individual, because they're not the leaders of the country.
No. But we have to go by the rules laid down by the UK government.
It's true. It's true. We have to learn the rules of the game, play to win.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to talk to you about is refinancing.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people get down valuations. So if you're doing, for instance, a buy, refurbish, refinance, you buy the house for 200 grand, spend 50 grand on it.
Yes.
And in your head, you're thinking the end value is going to be 350.
Yes.
Valuer goes around and says, nope, it's 300.
Yes.
And the deal's not as good as you thought. And there's many ways that we teach, as you know, we teach through our training how to prevent that from happening.
Yeah.
So one of the things is making sure that you have correct end values. Maybe know the lender that you're going to choose ahead of time and get them to go up before you've even started the work or before you've even bought the property and give you a value. There's lots of things. But one of the things that really messes people up is letting their tenants show the value around. I'm sure this is something that you've seen.
Yes, we feel strongly about this.
Talk to me about this, because people need to understand this.
If you're refinancing a property, that means you're having a mortgage on a property that you already own. And one of the things that the lender you go to will do will be to send their valuer out to the property. And we say, if at all possible, make sure it's you, the owner of the property, who shows the valuer over, for several reasons. First of all, you know that you're going to be there. You're going to keep the appointment. You're not going to forget it.
Yeah.
Secondly, you're going to have the keys to all the rooms. You're going to be able to show the value of the whole house. Because if the valuer can't see all the rooms in the house, they might well say, I can't value this house. I can't see it. So the third thing is the valuer might ask questions about what you've done to the house.
They probably will ask those questions.
Yeah. So you're there. You're on the spot.
Yeah.
So you're making sure you're there. You're making sure the appointment's kept. You're making sure the valuer has access to everywhere. And also you're ready to answer all the questions. We've got one at the moment. And the man's going to be there because the house has been underpinned.
Yeah.
And we've got all the structural engineer's documents and all the guarantees which we've given to the valuer. And when their valuer goes, I'm sure the valuer will ask the owner a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is we found from experience, people say, oh, well, the tenant said they'll show them over. Well, sometimes the tenant forgets.
Yeah.
That's not a good way forward for the valuer. Or the tenant might not have the keys to all the rooms. Or not deliberately, we have had it where the tenant says to the valuer, oh, could you say to the landlord, please, there's a bit of damp in that corner. Can he sort that out? Or there's a fizzy light switch over there.
That is what tenants would do, mate. That is, it's so strange. Oh, can you have a word with the landlord? What are you doing? It's like sabotaging without trying.
I don't think it's done deliberately.
No, it's just tenants, isn't it?
They're just thinking, well, can I get something done? This is a man representing the man or woman representing the landlord.
Yeah.
So can you get them a message?
Another thing as well that I see is the other extreme though, where the owner will meet the valuer, but they'll try and convince them it's worth more and they'll become a nuisance and they'll say things like, what are you thinking then?
Yes.
And it's like, no, don't do that.
It's a good idea not to grill a valuer.
Or not to, here's what I do when I meet a valuer, because it happens a lot. I won't ask them any questions.
No.
They can ask me the questions.
Yes.
I'll just be professional, be friendly, and I'll let them walk around. One of the things I've learned, not to do to a valuer, is to try and show them, go in this room first. Then just, if you can, give them freedom to just, and say, look, I always say to them, I say, I'll be outside, I'll wait here for you. Any questions, let me know. Let them do their thing. Let them, don't be there asking them, what do you think then? Oh, that one sold for this much. Because you're probably just going to irritate them by doing that. But what I do is I will give them, I'll just say, oh, just for your records, if you want. And I give them a little pack with before and afters and stuff like that. And
yes.
Refurb, how much I've spent, what I've done. And I just say, oh, this might be of interest. Here you go. And I'll leave them with it.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's good because my experience as an estate agent was that sometimes you'd be asked to value somebody's house for them. They'd follow you through every room. And we had the classic silly nonsense that you'd walk into the kitchen and they say, this is the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know.
This is the lounge.
Yeah.
Yes, thanks, mate. I'm glad you're here.
Or they might say, that's not damp, you know, in that corner. So, yes, you're absolutely right. I agree with you entirely. If you can do it, say to the valuer, here's the house. It's all open.
Yeah.
Would you like to help yourself? I'm around if you want to ask some questions. That's a much better way of doing it.
And the thing is as well, depends on the project, right? If it's a street where there's all the houses are the same and you've got really good comparables. But if I'm buying something which is like a development property, I'm turning some, I bank into flats, I'm doing something like that, I'll always get a valuation before I start the works. Before I buy the property, I'll lend to come out and say, what would this be worth if I renovated it into this? And then they'll give me the figure and I'll use that valuer to actually do the valuation at the end as well.
Yes, I mean, I won't mention any names at all, but when we go to do a mortgage, a buy-to-let mortgage especially, we say to the mortgage lender, what's the name of the firm of valuers you use?
Uh-huh.
Now, some of them have a range of valuers to choose from. Some don't. Some only use one firm of valuers.
Yeah.
If they give us a certain name, we say, well, we don't want it, thank you, because we know from experience it's going to be problems.
Yeah.
And I do know of some estate agents up north who, if that firm of valuers contacts them and says, you're selling a house, we want to come out and view it for the purchasers, the estate agents say, you're not coming.
Exactly. Good for them.
So
because you mess it up. You've ruined it.
Yes. Well, we challenge whether these valuers are properly qualified because we've had a lot of battles with mortgage valuers. We had one not so long ago. It didn't make any difference, but it was a house in a nice holiday area overlooking the sea. It was a bungalow, a beautiful place. And there were similar properties along the street selling for 2.5 million. And our client, the lady, had been renting it out for some years for £3,500 a month.
Ish.
The valuer came out for the mortgage lender because she wanted to raise some finance. Said, £3,500 a month? No, £2,500 a month.
What?
£2.5 million? No, 1 million. And we said, what? It didn't affect how much she wanted to borrow, so she didn't care.
No.
But it was silly. It was silly.
So silly.
Yeah, yeah. We would have had something to say about that if it had affected the borrowing that she wanted.
Another thing that people get really confused about is about the solicitor's panel.
Yes.
And that's something that often, especially if you're set on a solicitor, where you've got like a family lawyer, who you really want to use this lawyer.
Yes.
And then people have even said to me, like, oh my gosh, the lender's being so difficult, but it's pretty standard. Could you talk about what that is?
Yes. No. Right. When you have a mortgage on a property, if you're buying a property, you instruct a solicitor to act for you in doing the legal work. So they correspond with the solicitors acting for the person selling, the vendor.
Yeah.
So your solicitor does that job, representing your interest with the vendor to check everything out legally, to see if they're happy to recommend it to you, the title, etc. But at the same time, if you're getting a mortgage, supposing you're borrowing 100,000, how do you get hold of that 100,000 from the lender? Well, they don't send it to me or to you, the borrower. They send it to your solicitor, trusting your solicitor to use that money to buy that property.
Yeah.
And in fact, they give your solicitor instructions as to things that they want him or her to check before they'll give the money. However, will the lender use just any firm of solicitors? No. They have a list of solicitors, most of them called a panel. So you have to make sure if you're going to buy somewhere and you want to use your favourite solicitor, that solicitor is acceptable as a firm to... And
they can put themselves on the panel though, can't they?
Not necessarily, because some lenders don't have an open panel. Right. So they said, no, it's closed at the moment. It's full up.
Yeah.
So possibly they could get on, but to get on, they have to qualify in several ways, and they have to be so many partners in the firm, two or three partners. Yeah. They have to be members of certain legal bodies. If they don't have that, they're not going to get in on the panel. But the other thing which people don't realise is, if you're buying in your personal name, whether it's a residential or a buy-to-let, your solicitor might be on the panel for that lender for personal name purchases, but not for limited company.
Yes.
So if you're going for a limited company mortgage, you have to make sure not only is your solicitor on the panel or is acceptable to the mortgage lender, but also is on the panel for limited companies.
Yeah.
Now, if they're not on the panel and you said, I'm only using my solicitor, thank you. It means you pay twice. You pay your own solicitor to act for you in purchasing it, and you pay a fee, if you like, to the lender's solicitor for the work that they do.
Yeah, which doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean, you're better off, if you can, just having one solicitor to do both functions.
Yeah. And building insurance as well. That's something that...
Yes. Well, people don't seem to understand or don't seem to be reminded that when you exchange contracts to buy somewhere, you are, as the purchaser, responsible for buildings insurance.
Yeah.
So if you exchange contracts today to complete in 2 weeks' time, if in that 2 weeks there's a claim on the... that something goes wrong, there's a fire or some other damage to the property, you, the purchaser, are responsible. Now, that's not to say that the person selling has cancelled their insurance, which they can do between exchange and completion, but it is important for you to know that you should be exchanging, or on exchange of contracts, you should insure the property. Now, sometimes your solicitor will not exchange contracts, still they've seen an insurance schedule. And what people don't realise is if you bid at auction for a property and you're successful with your bid, from the time you've successfully bid, you should insure the property between then and the time that the auction...
And that's something that solicitors will want to see.
Well,
and lenders.
Lenders will want to see, yeah. But remember I said just now that for the solicitor to get the money out of the mortgage lender when that you buy, they've got to fulfil certain functions. One of those functions might be that the solicitor has to tell the lender or show the lender an insurance schedule to confirm that it's insured.
Yeah. Flexible mortgages.
Yes.
Are they still a thing, or are they totally...
We can't find any at the moment. They used to be a very, very useful thing for people.
Yeah, explain what it is exactly.
Right. Flexible mortgage years ago was one where you would perhaps have a facility of a mortgage on your house. So supposing the house was worth 200,000 and you wanted 100,000. You could have a mortgage offer and go through with the mortgage for £100,000 borrowing. But if you weren't going to use it immediately because you're looking for properties, you might want to not start paying the mortgage based on owing £100,000. You might say, well, no, let it sit there. One of the ways around it was a flexible mortgage where you could have that as a facility set up and then draw it down in tranches as and when you needed it, and then you started to pay for whatever you'd drawn down.
Yeah.
And that was very useful. And we used to use those a lot in the 80s and the 90s. They've dried up now. And I think they dried up during the 2008 period.
Yeah.
When things got wrong. We've got people who want those types of facilities and we can't find them. So we're using what's called an offset mortgage to work in a similar way.
Is that like a creative workaround?
It is a creative.
And how does that work then? Because are these pretty common then? Or a lot of people using these?
No.
But they should.
We use them. And when somebody says, well, flexible mortgage, we say, right, we did one yesterday. Let's use the offset mortgage.
Yeah. Processing. So explain then what that looks like.
Right. Back of a cigarette packet then.
Yeah.
you borrow £100,000. You also open a savings account with the same lender. So you have a mortgage of 100,000 and a savings account. If they advance you £100,000, you can put that £100,000 and any other money you want to in the savings account.
Yeah.
You don't get interest on the savings account. Because if you get interest on a savings account, you have to pay tax on it. So instead, what the lender does, the computer says, right, they owe us 100,000. How much is in the offset account? 100,000. Oh, there's no interest due on the mortgage. Or you might have drawn 10,000 out of that 100,000. So you've got 90,000 left in the offset account.
Uh-huh.
So you're paying interest on 90,000, not 100,000. So in other words, especially for high rate taxpayers, it's been a godsend for them to get tax relief, if you like, on the interest on the mortgage. Not tax relief, but, you know, tax concession. That's an offset mortgage. There's not many left.
Uh-huh.
There used to be a lot of them. They got very popular in the 90s. And what used to happen is people used to go into their regular bank for a mortgage and be persuaded to have an offset mortgage. And in fact, it wasn't right for everybody. It didn't work for everybody the way they ran their finances. And it got some people in a mess.
Yeah.
So it fell into disrepute. But we use them now where they're appropriate, especially if somebody really needs a flexible mortgage.
Yeah. And I think as well with all products, it's like, you know, tracker mortgages and everything. It's not, people say to me, oh, is it, are they good or bad? And there's no good or bad. It's a case of looking at your situation, looking at the deal you're doing.
Yes.
And seeing if it's a good fit. It's a tool, isn't it? People say to me about bridging loans, Samuel, is a bridging loan a good idea? And I'm like, well, it's a terrible idea on the wrong deal.
Yes.
But
yes.
It's a fantastic idea.
Yes.
On a property which you need to bridge the gap between purchase and refinance.
Yes, yes.
And you don't have the finance to do it. It's fantastic if it's on the right property.
It's also good if it's a property that's not mortgageable.
Exactly right.
And it's also for time. You know, yeah. if you need to buy the property next week, and the legal
work's done. It's not good or bad. It's just a tool. Yes,
it's a tool, yeah.
I want to talk to you about interest rates. So
yes.
When interest rates were really low, we knew that they were going to go up. For a start, the longer you fix the term for, the higher the rate.
Yes.
Is it still the case that now, the longer you fix it, the lower the rate? I know that was true for a time.
It is still roughly at the moment. Yes.
That's incredible. So it just goes to show.
Yes.
The lenders know what's going on.
Yes.
And
yes.
So should we. It doesn't take a rocket scientist.
No.
So, but the thing is, we are seeing rates falling. Still, yes. But then with some lenders, they're actually even rising.
Yes.
So what's going on?
Right, okay.
And what's base rate right now?
Well, base rate's 4.25%, isn't it?
Yeah.
And last Thursday, the Bank of England met and kept it. They didn't increase it.
I think I personally believe it will go back into the threes over the next year or so.
A lot of people feel the same way.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put my net worth on it, but I reckon it will be.
Yes. Well, I mean, I spoke to a man a couple of days ago and he's got a 1.5% fixed, which ends next month.
So he's screwed next month.
And I said, well...
He's been happy. This is another thing. Sorry to interrupt, yeah. But with people like him,
yes.
If you can't make money with buy-to-let when rates are that low,
yes.
Then you're a terrible investor. do you know what I mean?
Yes,
if you can make money now with buy-to-let, if rates drop a bit, it will go easier. But your guy is screwed, isn't he?
Well, this is a residential mortgage. So you know, I said you're paying £350 a month for a mortgage of this
size. What's that going to go up to, 900?
It's going to go up to something like 800 or something. Yeah. Yes, something like that. So I said, your mortgage payment is going to be more than double. He said, yeah, I know that. Whatever you do, whether you stay with your existing lender or go somewhere else, it's, you know, you're not going to get 1.5% anywhere. We have had for some time this year some rates that I don't want to call fake, but they are... You can misunderstand them if you're not careful. So supposing you came to a rate that was 3.5% fixed for 2 years, doesn't that sound appealing at the moment? That sounds really appealing. 3.5% for 2 years. Look carefully, because there might be more to it than you realise.
Go on, like what?
Like a product fee, an upfront fee of £15,000 or something like that.
15,000.
Yes, I've seen it. And so we had a lady, I think she was an Academy member, about a month ago, said, my broker's offered me a lender. There's one that just like that. And the other one is 5% for 2 years. And there's no fee with the 5% one. It didn't take me long to work out on the calculator that the 5% one was better than the 3.5% one. So I won't say the 3.5% one was fake.
Well, it is fake if there's a 15 grand fee up front.
But so on the internet, if you go on the internet, which people do, you're looking at what are interest rates like and with mortgages, and it'll say things like 3.5% or 4% or something. You need to know more about it.
Yeah.
You need to know the ins and outs of it to be able to make a proper judgment. What do you think about
April mortgages?
Well, we have contacted them because when they brought out their scheme for 100% mortgages.
Have you done it yet or not?
We haven't done it
Why?
Yet. Because one reason is because you've got to have, I think, a 10-year fixed. It's a long time.
That's ridiculous.
It's a long time to fix your mortgage. and the penalties for coming out entirely within the 10 years.
Hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Hang on a minute. There's a reason they want to fix you in for 10 years because they're taking advantage of the high rates.
Well, I don't know their philosophy behind it. I do remember that Gordon Brown, if you remember him,
yeah.
He believed we should always all have a 25-year fixed rate mortgage. And that was his philosophy.
As in like the rate fixed 25 yes. years? Why did he think that? What was his rationale?
I don't know.
What was his rationale?
He was the Chancellor.
Maybe there was an agenda behind that one. So April mortgages, haven't had any because of the 10-year. But then if you're fixed, but the rates they're fixed them at, is it like 4.8%, was it, or something?
I think it was more than that.
But
the thing is, it's the same with the buy-to-lets. Now, the buy-to-lets, some people say, well, it's no longer a 25% deposit needed. You can get 15% and 20%. And that's true. There are some lenders who do 15% and 20% deposit.
That's a big deal.
But if you look at the rates of interest and the costs.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
It's often, well, I have had at least one man who said, I want a 75%, please, because I've looked at the 85 and 80%. It's not worth it. The interest rates are too high. The charges are too high. I'll go and play the whole field, which is 75%. Most people do 75%.
Well, we teach 75%.
That's a good idea.
A good idea. But we all know you can do it a bit less. I mean, we've had a lot of people that have done 20%.
Down. Yeah, we do them. But you've got to be happy that it's worth it.
Yes.
And it's not, you shouldn't just find
out. So what you're saying, Andrew, is you got to look at the full picture. You've got to look at the product fees up front, the length of term.
Yeah.
You've got to look at the loan to value. It's not just about the rate.
Yes. Well, you asked me about the 100%. So let's go back to that.
Let's talk about it.
If you don't have 100%, there's only about three lenders who do 100%, genuine 100%.
I didn't know there was that many. Apart from April, who are they?
There's Skipton.
Skipton have been talking about that for ages, haven't they?
They've had that out for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And there's another one, I forgot what they're called, another new one.
Right.
We keep trying to get hold of them and we haven't been able to do
it. Have you done any of Skipton?
Well, 100%. We've tried some with Skipton.
It sounds to me, Andrew, like these 100% things is a bit of a marketing stunt and they don't really give out that many loans.
Well, what happens is this. The Skipton one is a good example. To qualify for a Skipton 100% loan, you have to currently be a tenant and have been one for 12 months.
Yeah.
And the mortgage payment to Skipton that you're going to have with 100% must not exceed the monthly rent you've been paying. So you can see a lot of people, they don't qualify.
That's not going to have a high catchment of people. And also most tenants, let's be real, they're not in buying mode.
I don't know. I mean, but, that's your bit. But certainly, if you can find 5% deposit, either a gift from a relative,
that's the one,
or somewhere else, that's going to open up a tremendously wide range of lenders.
So
to
rather than
from,
trying to get 100% mortgage, yes. And yes, it's possible, yes. But you have to be fixed in for 10 years,
yes,
or you have to be a tenant,
on that one, yes, yeah.
Yeah. But you'd be better off doing 95% mortgages. So 95% mortgages. I've known a lot of people on the academy do 95% mortgages.
Yes.
And I know you've helped some of them out.
Well, also, you're not so exposed to the possibility of negative equity, which you've talked about
before. Well, who cares? I mean, I don't really care about negative equity that much. Because you know why I don't care about it, Andrew? Yes. I'm quite bullish on it.
Yeah.
When it comes to property, I think that we could do a whole separate podcast. I think the property prices are going to go up a lot over the next 5 to 10 years.
Right.
I don't know what you think.
I don't have a crystal ball, so I just...
No, but you're a smart man. You must be able to see that...
I've heard politicians say, since I've been doing the work, in 1972 I started, and they've always said the same thing, we're going to stamp out the peaks and troughs in the property market.
Right.
And I think, well, how are you going to do that?
What do they mean by that? They're going to get rid of the cowboys?
No, they're going to get rid of the peaks and troughs. They're going to get rid of the booms and busts.
Oh, isn't it just going to have it like a...
Yeah.
Like that. No, they're not though. That's ridiculous. I mean, for a start, they say that, but then they bring base rate from 0.1 to 5.25 over the space of, 14 months? Yeah. Come on! Of course you're going to have a crash. That was a manufactured crash.
Yes, yes. Well, I do remember the one in the late 80s, 1990.
Yeah.
And well into the early 90s, people weren't moving house because they were frightened of what was going on.
Yeah.
And what got the market moving in the end was the fact that people had to move house for the job or for the children's school or something. And in the end they said, oh, fed up with this, I'm moving anyway, whatever the market's
like. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's how it got going again in the 90s.
Yeah. It's interesting looking back over the last, but ever since back when they took money off of the gold standard with inflation,
yeah,
even if property values aren't going up, property prices are still going up according to the Great British Pound.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, that's probably another podcast. Let's talk about, go back to lenders. I'm getting a lot of, not just my own lenders, but a lot of people are telling me that their current provider is almost pushing them a little bit, or trying, being a bit forceful with trying to get them to renew their...
Yes. If your fixed rate or your tracker rate is coming to an end in 2 or 3 months' time, we're hearing from clients that a lot of lenders they're with are contacting them and urging them to consider taking a new deal out.
Uh-huh.
Now, we say be careful about that because they can't give you any advice. So you can't say to them, well, this is my situation. Which of these deals do you think is suitable for me? They can't really do that because it's what's called execution only. So the lender says, which one of these would you like? Press the button on the one you like. And we're finding also that some people, therefore, take up a deal with their lender directly without taking any advice. And the advice would have to come from somebody like us. They take it up with them. And then a few months or a year later, they think, oh, dear, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
And if they go back to the lender and say, I'm sorry, you messed up for me. I haven't had good advice. The lender's likely to say, well, we can't give you advice anyway. We didn't give you advice. We said, would you like one of these? And you press the button and said, I'll have that one, please.
Interesting, that is.
And that's what's happening a lot.
Yeah.
Because the lenders obviously want to keep people, even though they know that the interest rate is probably double what it was.
So it's the uneducated, ignorant people that are just thinking, oh, here are my three options.
I'm not saying they're ignorant or...
Well, they are, though. But they are, because if they're not getting advice, if they're just pushing a button based on, oh, these are my three options, and not getting, looking elsewhere, then their ignorance, not in a nasty way, but that's cost them a lot of money.
It does. I've got a couple of people I've spoken to recently, and it's cost them a lot.
Yeah.
Thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
What I just say is, like everything else, a mortgage is a big item, get independent advice about it before you press any buttons.
Are lenders becoming more flexible now with underwriting?
Yes. We've had lots of visits recently in the last month from regional managers from lenders because we've said this before, lenders tick boxes. I always have this silly thing I say that our king, King Charles, if he rang up a buy-to-let lender and said, I'd like a buy-to-let mortgage, please, he might well be declined, because he might not be able to tick all the boxes on their list. So until quite recently, lenders were very into ticking boxes. Oh, it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Oh, you know. Now, we've had this before when times have got hard for lenders. The regional managers are coming into the office saying, look, if you get something that looks, it doesn't tick all the boxes, give us a ring.
Right.
We might be able to
consider
it.
That's so smart. So all these self-employed people that are making millions of pounds but slightly income, or another one as well is property income. I've had situations where I can't borrow as much money as I'd think. Even when I bought this house 5 years ago, how much did they give me? £1 million?
I can't remember.
I think they gave me £1 million or 1.5 million. And I'm thinking, hang on a minute. No, it was more than that. It might have been a bit just over 2 million. I can't remember, but I do remember thinking, that's the max you're going to give me.
Yes.
I'm not being arrogant, but I'm making kind of good money. But the way that a lot of my money is made, because it's made in property, they don't look at rents, do they? They don't see that as...
Quite a lot of lenders for residential mortgages don't take...
No, they don't take it into account.
It's box ticking again, you see.
I'm like, hang on a minute, I've got all these money, I've got all these properties, and they're like, no, we just want to look at this type of income. Yes. It doesn't make any sense.
Yes. No, there's still a lot of box ticking going on.
Yeah, but they're getting a little bit more flexible.
There's this true story of a lady about 20 years ago, a client of mine.
Yeah.
And this was box ticking. And I knew it would happen. She had about, in those days, about £13.5 million worth of assets. Approximately half was cash and stocks and shares, and the other half was in property. She rang me from London and said, I've got this opportunity to buy this fantastic place in Mayfair, £4 million, which I'm going to rent out. And it's a good price. Get me a good buy. The accountant says I mustn't buy it for cash. I've got to get a mortgage. So I found a really good mortgage deal, buy-to-let mortgage deal for her, and I knew what would happen. I phoned the mortgage lender and said, here's this woman, 13 and a half million. And the underwriter said to me, what does she do for a living? I said, what do you mean? He said, what's her job? Yeah, job. She's got 13 and a half million. He said, well, hasn't she got a job earning at least 15,000 a year? And I said, no.
She's a multi-millionaire. She ain't pushing paper rounds.
I said, oh, we couldn't do it.
That is so ridiculous.
So I rang her and said, you've got to get a job and work for somebody at 15,000 a year. She didn't stop laughing for about 10 minutes. I mean, I got her a good mortgage somewhere else quite quickly.
Oh, was the man. Problem, but, yeah. That is so funny. Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes. Yeah. Stress test is an interesting one.
Yes.
So my understanding, and I know that I think they're relaxing slightly at the moment,
yes.
But you can talk about that. So generally speaking, if you're buying a property, they want to make sure that the rent can more than cover the mortgage.
Yep.
Of usually, I teach 1.5 times. I know it's a little less than that, but I think it's safe to say
right.
If the mortgage payment's interest only going to be $1,000 a month, make sure the rent is at least 1,500.
Right.
That's what I say. I know it's like, I think it's 1.35 if it's through a company or something.
Well, the company stress test is more favourable than the one in personal name.
Is it?
And
has that changed recently?
No, it's been like that for some years now. Now, the reason for that is this. If it's in your personal name, you either could be now or could become a high rate taxpayer. In which case, the burden of tax on the income against the rental and the mortgage payments could be harder than it is now. However, if it's a limited company, you're buying it in limited company for the tax concessions.
Yeah.
So the stress test is easier on the limited company mortgage.
That's really interesting. So what is the number then? Is it about 1.3 times the rent?
Right. Before the crash of the mortgage interest rates.
Which crash?
When the interest rates went up.
Okay.
A couple of years back. Before that, the stress test was something like this. Assume an interest rate on the mortgage of 5.5%.
Right.
Yeah. Gross that up, if it was limited company, by another 25%. And that's what the rent should be.
Right.
That's what it was. And people say, but why 5.5%? Because I'm only paying 1.5%.
Yeah.
And we said, well, it's a long mortgage. It's 20, 25 years. The lender's thinking, well, interest rates could go up that high.
Not could,
that
they period. Will go up. Of course.
And they did.
Of course. They knew they would. To 5.5%, ironically.
Well, so now that 5.5%
became
7.1% with a lot of lenders.
So you're working it out slightly different to how I'm working it out, I think.
We're working it out slightly differently, but the way you've described it comes out much the same way. But if it's a limited company, it's softer. Now, in the last month, a lot of lenders, buy-to-let lenders, have softened their whole stress test.
Have they?
Yeah, a lot of lenders.
So what then?
Well, various things. You know, some of them say, whatever the pay rate is on the mortgage, supposing the pay rate is 5%, add 1% to it, that brings it up to 6%, and we'll work on that. And then we'll split that up. So there's a variety of things. The others also have done for some years. A lot of them say, if you have a 5-year fix with us, we'll soften the stress test.
Yeah, of course they will.
And others say, in addition to that, We might do the 5-year fixed rate and soften it. We might also soften it if we do a thing called top slicing. Have you heard of that?
Go on.
Top slicing. Here we are.
I do know what it is, yeah.
You're right, right. The rent is, say, £300 a month short on the calculation.
Yeah.
They look at your personal income and they say, oh, you've got lots of income coming in. You're hardly paying anything out for your cost of living with residential mortgage. You've got hundreds or even thousands spare every month. We'll rob some of that and put it over to prop up the rental.
You did that with Ricky Mandel.
Did when I?
You did his mortgage.
Right, okay. Well, so some lenders will do 5-year fixed, stress test. Some will do 5 years fixed rate and the top slicing.
Unless you're buying a residential property and you're buying it to live in, if the lender's not prepared to lend you because of the stress test, probably that means it's a terrible deal anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not even a fruitful conversation. No, it's like if the lender's worried that the rent won't cover the mortgage and a tiny bit more, what are you buying it for?
You should be worried.
You should be worried. It's like when a bridging, if you can't get a bridging loan, unless the reason is lack of experience, in which case that's a shame. That's why I set up my finance company. If they're worried about the deal, it probably means it's a bit of a bad deal.
Yes.
Generally. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I say to people, if it fails the stress test, is it giving you a signal?
Yeah.
If
you're getting a bridging loan, what's your opinion on exit strategies, because I see this coming up as well.
Our opinion is this: if you're having a bridging loan, the exit strategy is equally important to all the other financial considerations. Now, the reason for mentioning that is some people, we say to them, you're having a bridging loan. Yes. What's your exit strategy? I'm going to sell the property. It's going to be a flip.
Uh-huh.
We say, what else? That's it. Well, that's dangerous in our opinion.
It's very dangerous.
Because if after, say, 6 months, you go to sell it and it doesn't sell, or it doesn't sell for the price you're expecting it to, how are you going to pay the bridge off?
Yeah.
So there should be a plan B always in that if you're flipping.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be refinanced, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And you've got to speak to an advisor, someone like yourself, to find out that you can refinance.
Well, we think so. We think so.
Well, you'd be mad not to, because you might end up being stuck on a bridge.
Well, yes. I mean, how often do we get a call from somebody who says, oh, yes, we need a mortgage to do something. We've been told by 1, 2, 3 brokers it's not possible. And we say, well, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's impossible.
Yeah. But Andrew, that's why you're different to most people. Because most property professionals, mortgage advisors, brokers, lenders, they find the problem, not the solution.
Well, a lot of our jobs are hospital jobs, you know.
Yeah.
Sorting out a problem that's been
created. They are. Yeah. Well, that's probably because you have me to deal with, and they're all hospital jobs.
We had one not so long ago, exercising the right to buy his own council flat.
Yeah.
He went to the biggest.
I'll pass that all to you, don't I? Those.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yeah, and anyway, it's an ex-council flat. Well, he lives in it. It's his own tenancy. He got a right to buy. So he went to a very, very large broking organisation, possibly the largest in the country. And they said, well, we won't charge you anything. We'll just get a commission off the mortgage we get. So they went to a mortgage lender for the mortgage. After about 4 or 5 weeks, the lender came round and said, well, we can't mortgage this property. He said, why not? And he said, well, it's not standard construction. It's a PRC home, concrete and steel. We don't do those. Now, when he first met me, he came into the office and I said, what's the address of the property? I had a look at it on Google Maps. Straight away, I said, well, it's a PLC. Yes, he said, well, we found that out now. And in fact, the tragedy in his case was he's lost his right to buy. It's expired.
Oh.
Now, he's reapplying, but he's reapplying after the 26th of November last year. So he's going to get much smaller discount.
That's 16% maximum.
He thought he was saving himself a bit of money on the broker's fees. In fact,
it's cost him a lot of money. He's not one of my guys,
is he? He's not one of yours.
Oh, that's all right then. If he was one of my guys, I'd find him and sort him out. What's a consumer buy-to-let?
Right. If you own a property that you have lived in yourself and want to refinance as a buy-to-let, the regulator asks lenders to treat it as a different mortgage from a standard buy-to-let.
Right.
So you have lived in the property. It's called a consumer buy-to-let. And the wording used by the regulator is it's an accidental buy-to-let. You didn't buy it with the purpose of renting it out.
Uh-huh.
You bought it with the purpose of living
in it. Is it easy to switch a residential to a consumer buy-to-let?
I wouldn't say it's easy because a lot of lenders don't do consumer buy-to-lets because they're not regulated to do them.
What about, could you not just get a letter of consent to do it for a couple of years?
Let me think about that. No, because you've lived in it.
Yeah, but let's say I'm living in a property.
Yeah,
this property.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably not a good example, but if I'm living in a house,
yes,
and then I think, actually, I want to rent this out.
Yes.
If I contact my lender and say, I've had a change of circumstances.
That's okay.
I want to rent it out.
If they say yes, that's fine.
Then they normally will, right?
That's on a consent to let.
For a couple of years.
If after that couple of years you described, you say, I want to move it to a buy-to-let mortgage with somebody.
Yes.
That's when the
I'll get a consumer buy-to-let. So a
consumer comes in, yeah.
Right.
Now, again, we have the cases where people go to a mortgage lender to do a buy-to-let remortgage.
Yeah.
They get halfway through it and the lender says, oh, wait a minute, you've lived in this, haven't you? And they say, yes, consumer buy-to-let, we don't do those.
It's so strange how pedantic they can be.
Well, it's the box ticking we're talking about.
But like lease options, why if I've got an option to buy a property at the end of the term, 5 years, when I go to buy it, will the lender say, well, hang on, you've had an interest in this property before, and then they make it so difficult? It's frustrating.
What does a lot of lenders say? We won't do a corporate buy-to-let. So in other words, if you've got a property that you own that you're renting out, and you're renting it out to an organization, a company.
Yes. That's another thing, though. That's not what I was talking about. No,
but it's, that's another example. How
They're being a bit more flexible. There's more lenders that are open to serviced accommodation now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's becoming a bit more acceptable.
It is becoming acceptable because so many people are doing it.
Yeah.
And it's leaving some lenders behind who don't do it. So same with HMOs.
What kind of lenders are the most common at the moment for me and my guys? Like the HMOs, serviced accommodation, creative, a bit more flexible.
Limited company?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the thing you've got to watch with limited company is if the lender does limited company mortgages, the minimum purchase price is often higher than it would be.
What is it? 100 grand?
100 grand plus normally. Yeah. Yeah. If it's less than 100 grand and that lender does mortgages on properties less than 100 grand, they might do it only on a personal name.
Yeah. But there's nothing wrong with binding your personal name, apart from Section 24, which in my honest opinion will be scrapped.
Well, Tim's got very definite views on this, hasn't he?
Does he agree with me or?
I don't know if he agrees that it will be scrapped, but he thinks too many people jump into the limited company market without talking to somebody like him to get the true position.
Correct. And Tim, for anyone who doesn't know, is chartered accountant, mentor on the academy.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit like you.
Yeah.
Do you enjoy being a mentor on the academy?
I do. It's a lot of fun because we have the first thing I say to somebody when they phone up generally, if they say, I found a house, I want to buy it, I say, I go to Google Maps. Let's have a look at it. Because, of course, you won't remember the famous Doncaster photographs we had a couple of years back.
Remind me.
Right. And I remember we had a few hundred people we were talking to online. And it was a real example. I've still got the Doncaster photographs. A client phoned up, not an academy member, and said, because he was buying one a month. He said, Andrew, I found a property in Doncaster. I'm viewing it tomorrow. Have a look at it. So I went onto Google Maps. And I saw a pre-war semi-detached house with a dirty great big crack from the first window to the ground floor. So I rang him and I said, what about that crack? What crack is it? There's no crack. There's a crack. Because on Google Maps, you know when the photograph was taken. It was only taken a few months before.
Yeah.
And I also like to look at the street scene, see if there's a pub next door or, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, I'll send you the photograph I've got over. What he sent me was the photograph on the front page of the agent's brochure. And where the crack was, somebody put a big lump of concrete. And I remember, because we were talking to hundreds of people and there were screams when the people saw that second photo.
Yeah, of course.
So when I told him about it, I sent him the photo from Google Maps. He just said, I'm cancelling it. I'm not going near it.
That's funny. Yeah, because as well as finding solutions for people, you'll also tell them when something's a duff, when something's a no-go.
Well, I mean, we had one not so long ago and you could just see to one side, it's a photograph of the front of a building.
Yeah.
The ground floor was a takeaway.
Yeah.
And the first floor was a flat, and it was the flat they were selling. But you could just see the Frog and Nightgown or whatever it was, the pub next door. You could just see the sign because the agent hadn't been able to exclude the pub next door.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So
I think as well, the thing is though, Andrew, is you can tell people that deal's a bad deal. Or have you seen this? Have you seen that? Oh, be mindful of this, fine. But when someone, there's a lot of people that say to me, I can't get a mortgage, I can't get this, I can't get that. And you've managed to mentor people, guide them, and help these people. So you're an incredible asset to the academy. So I appreciate you coming on the show.
No problem.
I'm sure that there'll be many people watching this that will get to know you at some point. And we'll do it again, maybe in another 6 months.
All right.
Thank you.
No problem.